Coming up on KUCB News, a former staffer recalls reporting on an erupting volcano, and Unalaska students earn a spot on the Iditarod podcast. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Thursday, March 7th, 2019. Unalaska Community Broadcasting has covered local news for the past 20 years, and to mark that anniversary, KUCB is spending every Thursday of 2019 looking back at our former reporters and sharing some of their stories. In March, we're focusing on Ann Hillman, who led the newsroom from 2008 to 2011. KUCB sat down with her in Anchorage recently to hear how she made her way to Unalaska.
So I went to journalism school after the Peace Corps because I didn't have any experience whatsoever. And I finished up my thesis and was looking for a job. And there was a job posted at KDLG in Dillingham. So I was out in Dillingham for a year. Great community, but the station was not quite the right fit for me. And at that point, Charlie was leaving KUCB and I knew him just through the public radio network. And he was like, hey, apply for out here. And I did. And luckily, I got the job.
What was it like when you arrived? What was the station like? What was town like?
Not terribly different than it is now. When I arrived, the station was at the Bermarone Chapel. We just had the one studio, no extra sound booths, nothing like that. The news department was one person, so it was Charlie that I was taking over for. Pipa was doing the TV stuff, and she had some various volunteers. Lauren was full-time. There's a guy named Daniel who was the DJ.
Daniel, last name?
Daniel Wyruck. You've never heard of Daniel?
Yes, I have. Wyruck.
Okay.
Remind me what his show was, though.
Oh, he did. He was the DJ, and he did a lot of, like, he was the reason everyone woke up to AC/DC at 8 a.m. That was Daniel.
So Daniel's helping Unalaska rock out as a DJ. What were you doing as the news reporter? What are some of the favorite or most important stories that you remember doing?
I think the ones that jump to my head are important. They're just quirky.
We like those, too.
Like, not long after I got there, there was this group of Russians who were going out to the island of the Four Mountains to set up a ham radio operation, to be the first ones to send radio signals and communicate for this competition. So they, you know, hired a boat and went out and set up tents with radio stuff. But on the way out there, Mount Cleveland erupted. So we were getting covered in ash from Mount Cleveland and then camping on its shore. So it's just like a weird, quirky thing, but also here's the sound of a volcano erupting.
And so you say were you out there with them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One of their guys couldn't get a visa. So I went out and I took the camera and I took the equipment and Lauren was like, okay, sure. And got stories about Russian ham radio operators. It was weird.
That's insane.
Pretty funny.
Were you guys in danger?
No.
Okay.
There's a lot of ash. I mean, I can tell you, probably walking around on the grass with the ash poofing up like right after was probably not the best for our lungs, but nah, we were in no danger.
If you were there in 2008, does that mean you were there for the switch from KIAL to
mm-hmm.
KUCB?
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember from that?
It is so much easier to say KUCB than KIAL. Like,
yes.
1,000 times easier. And that's mostly what I remember. I mean, it was pretty seamless. It was just started saying new things.
And that was a KUCB transition. But what about your transition from Unalaska eventually to Anchorage, where you work at Alaska Public Media's radio station? Take me through all of that.
So when I was in Unalaska, I met my wife, Jeanette, who worked at Fish and Game at the time. And when we decided to leave, we went traveling for about a year all throughout Africa. Didn't really know where to go next, and Jeanette wasn't done with Alaska, and I was like, all right, Anchorage, that sounds fine. So we settled here and actually did kind of a variety of things. I worked abroad for a while in South Sudan and did a little bit of freelance stuff here and kind of bounced around. And then eventually was hired on as the Anchorage reporter. And within a couple of years, that shifted to urban affairs. And my reporting all ended up coalescing around basically social problems, but you can't just report on problems because there actually are people who are working to solve those. And if you just keep the narrative focused on the negative, nothing changes. So for the past about year and a half, I've been doing a project called the Solutions Desk, which is looking at what's happening around the state to help solve things like homelessness and like help people reenter the community after prison. And I host a conversation series. People come together to talk about difficult issues. So in Unalaska, it was a conversation around immigration and integration and how do you make this very diverse small community stay united. I've done a whole bunch inside of prisons with people who are incarcerated and people who are not, talking about life inside the walls and how to transition out.
Well, thank you, Anne, for speaking with me. Before I let you go, any final thoughts on your time working at KUCB or your time just living in Unalaska?
I guess I just want to thank everybody out there. I was a young reporter when I was out there, and you get a lot of young reporters, which means that takes a lot of patience and giving on behalf of the community. And so I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that, you know, it was a great place to be when I was out there. Just I met a lot of amazing people. It was beautiful. I learned a lot about different worlds that I wouldn't have normally intersected with, especially with the fishing industry, learning about Anangan culture. And, you know, that changes who you are and how you interact with the world. So I'm grateful for my years out there.
That was Anne Hillman, the fourth reporter in the history of Unalaska Community Broadcasting. Join us each Thursday for the rest of the month when we'll be re-airing some of her stories as part of our year-long series celebrating the 20th anniversary of KUCB's newsroom. You can also check out Hillman's most recent work at Alaska Public Media, though she recently left that job to take some time off and bike across the country. And if you missed our January feature on first reporter Jim Paulin or our February dedication to third reporter Charlie Homans, you can now find those online at kucb.org. Our homepage is currently displaying all the pieces that we've produced for this series so far. Unalaska's basketball teams play their first games of the postseason today. Both the Raider boys and girls are ranked second as they enter the regional tournament in Anchorage, and both are riding winning streaks of at least six games. You can listen to both of Unalaska's contests live here on 89.7 FM. The girls play first at 4 o'clock against Unalakleet. Then the boys take the court at 7 against the winner of the Selawik-Unalakleet matchup. Alaska Congressman Don Young has hit a milestone. He is now the longest-serving Republican member of Congress ever. Yesterday, Young surpassed the previous record of 46 years held by Representative Joseph Cannon of Illinois, whose tenure began in 1873. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin recently asked Young about his history and about the bloopers and gaffes that have punctuated his career.
Young was first sworn into office in March 1973. He says of all the work he's done, the most significant was the bill approving the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, a project that transformed the state.
There's no Alaskan right now isn't somehow touched by what I've been able to do in Congress. And people say, well, that's kind of presumptuous, but you think everybody gets a permit that had been unchecked. That was my bill. And people forget that, but I'm going to remind them again.
But when Young makes national headlines, it's usually for more colorful episodes, and they are recounted over and over in every profile. The time he uttered a crude sexual term when addressing high school students, the time he had to apologize for using a derogatory word for Latino migrants, or the time C-SPAN cameras caught him making faces on the House floor as a colleague was speaking about a Marine killed in action. Young says he is who he is, and he doesn't mind the stories.
In some cases, I might have outlived the so-called politically correct term, but it's still me.
In fact, Young says he's likely to create more colorful moments in the years to come.
Because I don't like, very frankly, the wishy-washy, mamby-pamby type people we have elected to Congress. And if there is a point to be made, I'll make it.
Young says when he took that oath of office in 1973, he never imagined he'd still be a congressman 46 years later. He says he never expected to be in Congress at all. He was a state House member and got elected to the state Senate in 1970. As he tells it, he didn't like the Senate, for the same reason he's never wanted to be in the U.S. Senate.
I don't like the way they conduct themselves. It is not, I think, a real active body, and that's national and in the state legislative body.
Young says his wife at the time, Lou, talked him into running for Congress as a way to quit politics. They figured the incumbent, Nick Begich, would win and Young could go back to Fort Yukon and his riverboats.
When I ran for Congress, and everybody knows that Nick took off on October 16th and never was found, and he still beat me.
Congressman Begich's chartered plane disappeared 3 weeks before Election Day in 1972. That November, Young took just 44% of the vote. That's another one of those stories people tell about Young, how he lost to a dead man. Did that hang over you? Did that bother you to hear that all the time?
I joke about it a little bit. You know, I sort of felt like the Pony Express rider that gets his horse shot out from underneath him and he finds a swayback, wall-eyed horse. But other than to ride that horse, he'll get killed.
Young won a special election in 1973 to take the seat. And he kept winning every 2 years. He's 85, the oldest member now in Congress. Young says he plans to serve as long as he remains in good health and the voters of Alaska decide to keep him. And by the way, Young is the longest-serving Republican member of the House or Senate in history. He would have to serve 13 more years to beat the record held by Democratic Congressman John Dingell, who died last month. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Current Iditarod leader Ali Zirkle is the first to the checkpoint of Iditarod, the race's halfway point. Her team, still with all 14 dogs, pulled in around 1:40 this morning to take their mandatory 24-hour rest. Zirkle wins the halfway award and $3,000 in gold nuggets for being the first to Iditarod. To make that happen, she blew past competitors resting at earlier checkpoints, but now many of those teams have finished their 24-hour breaks and are getting back on the trail, rested and ready to go. The first was reigning champion Yor Olsom, who left to Katna with 13 dogs.
You can leave anytime.
Right. Thank you guys for all the help.
Thank you.
Credit.
This year, a large number of mushers took their 24s in the small community of Takatna, and that pause gave them time to share stories from the trail, whether it be animal encounters, sled malfunctions, or late-night injuries. Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes has more.
Between Ron and Nikolai, Richie Deal got walloped.
I was looking off the side of the trail, like a 45 to the trail, and out of the corner of my eye, I noticed... a little reflection out the side of my eye. I turned my head, right when I turned my head, there's a tree with a reflector on it and hit me. I flew off the sled and next thing I knew I was on a dead sprint chasing the sled down, and I dove and caught the sled. All of a sudden I was standing in the middle of the dogs and they were all staring at me and there's blood everywhere. I initially thought I knocked out all my front teeth.
Once back on his sled runners, he could tell it was a serious wound, and he cleaned it with toilet paper and wet wipes as he continued on. Nikolai that morning, folks brought him to the clinic for butterfly stitches. But it's not throwing much of a kink in Deal's race. He can see fine, is taking care of the wound, and plans to continue on as normal at a competitive pace. Not far from his team is Ed Hopkins, technically an Iditarod rookie, but a seasoned veteran of the Yukon Quest.
I underestimated it. Thought I had it figured out, but obviously I didn't do enough homework.
Hopkins says it's the midday heat and timing runs to avoid it. That's the biggest curveball for his team and race strategy.
I mean, I know how to run in really cold weather and things like that, and I've been doing it for a long time, you know, but this is new to me.
The other major hiccup was the state of the buffalo tunnels. A rough ride over tussocks and frozen soil with barely any snow to soften the bumps. Hopkins didn't see the bison in the area, just mounds of sign that they'd been around. Moose, however, he did see, and so did Jeff King.
You know, I've lived in Alaska 40 years and I still get that close to a moose, and some of them, you just can't help but go, oh my God, it looks like a dinosaur, it's so huge. These both were just enormous. I mean, good Lord, they're huge, like a Clydesdale horse.
King had two separate encounters, but made it out of both unscathed. Not without excitement, though.
He thought we were chasing him, and as we ran, I saw his hackles go up, and he's like, okay, I'm in for a fight. And I actually encouraged the dogs to go fast, because it was clear he thought we were chasing him, And so the moose is thinking, you're chasing me, and I really wanted to outrun him. And it wasn't until we kind of got in front of him, we were winning the sprint.
As King is talking, he's swapping out the runner plastic on his sled. He's mounting wide white strips, about the width of a palm, that will hopefully help him stay floating on top of the new fresh snow during the upcoming sections of trail. A bit like replacing normal cross-country skis with wide backcountry ones. Though the trail was hard and fast for early stretches of the race, heading up into the Alaska Range, it slowed down in the last day on the way into the interior. It's not clear how much of a role the good trail conditions are playing in one novel element of this year's race. As of Wednesday afternoon, only one musher had scratched, Shani Traska in Nikolai. Bruce Lee works for the Iditarod Insider and is a race veteran, and says he doesn't recall any race with just a single scratch this far into competition.
Which speaks pretty highly to the caliber of dogs people are raising now and the knowledge that previous mushers have passed on to rookies about feeding and equipment, and that's a pretty successful race to get here and not have a scratch.
Competitors this year are also more closely bunched together than in many prior years, but after the front of the pack mushers come off their 24-hour rests, the race starts to speed up. In Takotna, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The average musher pace traveling from Takotna to Ophir to Iditarod has been slow, which suggests the trail is growing more challenging. And what's more, it's been warm around the three Yukon River checkpoints that teams will hit after they pass that halfway point. The race's true leaders will become clearer over the next day as teams grapple with those conditions and continue completing their 24-hour breaks. And in local Iditarod news, Unalaska students were recently featured on an episode of the Iditapod. That's the podcast about the Iditarod produced by Alaska Public Media and KNOM. Middle school students crafted questions about the 1,000-mile race after KUCB staff taught a lesson about mushing and radio reporting. Here's the result of the kids' work in a segment from the show.
And that's a contrived segue to today's listener question. It's actually two related questions from students in Aaron Knight's language arts classes out in Unalaska.
My name's Alyssa. I'm also from Unalaska, and my group mates are Michelle, Natalie, and Alyssa Marie. And our question is, have any of the mushers got hurt, and did they have to stop participating in the race?
Hi, my name's Aaron. My groups are Mateus and Zach. What happens if the dog got hurt?
Thanks for listening, and thanks for the great questions, everybody. So what happens when there are injuries on the trail? Here's our trail reporter, Zachariah Hughes, with the answer.
If a dog's hurt, his or her musher will leave it at a checkpoint. The veterinarians take care of it, and the Iditarod takes over. They'll take groups of dogs that are hurt or dropped or sick and move them back to Anchorage or somewhere where a handler or somebody who knows the musher picks up the dog and takes care of it for a while. Mushers, unless they're really, really hurt, will keep going. One time, Aaron Burmeister broke his knee coming down the Dalzell Gorge, and he finished the Iditarod hundreds of miles later, kind of limping over the finish line, but he made it. So other times, mushers will fall off their sleds and crack ribs and maybe withdraw or maybe keep going. They are pretty tough, and it's really up to them if they're hurt, whether or not they want to keep trying to finish the race.
Thanks for getting that answer to us, Zach. And as always, I want to remind the listeners that you can send your questions to iditarod@alaskapublic.org.
You can find full episodes of the Iditapod online at alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Elementary schoolers from Unalaska also recorded questions for the show, and if they're featured, we'll be sure to share those clips with you as well. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.